And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this Monday, December 11th edition of the Hagman Report. We are so happy to be here today. We got a lot of information we're going to get into. We got my father, Doug Hagman, who's a co-host. He is on, he's doing something else right now, busy, but in studio. So John is going to be co-hosting the show with me today, and we got a lot we're going to get into. We got some fantastic guests coming up. In hour two, we are going to be joined for a part two interview we started last week with Jake Morfonius. He has the End Times News Report on YouTube, and he has been providing updates on the his investigation into Las Vegas and where that is going. We also have at 9:30 journalist Alicia Powell. She's going to be joining us. And then at 9:30 to 10, Peter Barry Chowka, he's going to be joining us in the last segment of the show to talk about his latest article, Anatomy of CNN's Boldest Anti-Trump Fake News Story. And we're going to get into this a little bit in the first hour because we have some interesting news, as CNN has not only walked back a scandal story, and there's some interesting media coverage on that, but also this from the Daily Caller today, CNN walks back Jeff Sessions' Russia bombshell story. And this goes on to say that quietly CNN walked back the bombshell reporting of Trump-Russia collusion narrative, and this time it's a story referring to Attorney General Jeff Sessions' security clearance forms. And this goes back to May, where CNN reported that Sessions failed to disclose meetings he had with the Russian ambassador when he was senator. And this was an issue, one of the issues or the reasons why apparently Sessions recused himself was some of these meetings that he had that he testified about. If you remember Kamala Harris, she kind of grilled him during his testimony into these matters in front of the House a few months back. Well, this article goes on to point out that CNN framed the non-disclosures as more evidence of collusion between Russia and Trump, saying that he continues to come under criticism and he has not disclosed these meetings and contacts in his Senate confirmation hearings earlier this year, so that is equal to collusion. Well, to bring this back around, they have had to admit today that the FBI emails prove that Sessions' explanation for the non-disclosure is accurate, and did so after newly released documents came out showing that the FBI told an aide to Attorney General Jeff Sessions that he wasn't required to disclose the foreign contacts that occurred. So long story short, CNN made a big deal about nothing, and Jeff Sessions, as we see, is still recused from the Russia investigation, but it's looking like he really he didn't have to disclose those contacts, so it's not an issue. Then the story that Chowka wrote about the latest round of fake news coming out of CNN or misreportings is much more interesting because it deals with a number of mainstream outlets that reported on this story with apparently two sources who both got the date wrong from an email they read. We're going to get more into this. I'm going to bring John on. John, welcome back to the Hagman Report. Each and every day, John and I host the show, the Hagman Daily Show, 12 to 1 on Blog Talk Radio Live, also 2 to 3 on Global Star. But now, for the first time in a few months, you're back doing the Hagman Report.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for having me. And it's always such a treat to sub in for Doug Hagman, who's working on some pretty serious investigative reports and really pulling some research together that Doug's been dealing with for quite some time. And we're going to get into some of that this evening with our Hour 2 guest, return guest, Jake Morfonius, who really hit it out of the park last week, Joe, with his insights and analysis into Las Vegas. And, you know, here we are over 2 months out of the biggest mass casualty event in U.S. history, and still all questions, no answers, Joe.
Yeah, well, again, his YouTube channel, End Times News Report, has videos since he was on, a number of videos dealing with Las Vegas and his investigations into Las Vegas, such as a company called Tiger Swan. He gets into that, and he also gets into a lot of the updates. And interesting, I want him to get into, this kind of ties into a story we're going to be talking about. YouTube hiring more of their more personnel to sift through content and determine what is extremist content. On the video that he did, that Jake Morfonius did, one of the latest videos, current leads in Las Vegas shooting investigation. Well, in this video on YouTube, he has said that the comments that have been posted by viewers on this video have been being hidden by YouTube, and they're not allowing those comments to be shown. So I wonder if there's something in there. I'm going to have him talk about that. But John, we talked about this earlier on the Daily Show. YouTube to hire, you said to have 10,000 people on staff to deal with what is and what is not extremist content. Is that 10,000 new people?
Yes, this according to the CEO of, or the president rather, of Google. And her name is Susan, and I struggle with her last name. It's a Scandinavian last name. I believe it's Mazoki or Mazoki. And forgive me for the mispronunciation of the last name. It really is a bear. But yeah, this from thehill.com, and we reported again on this earlier today on the Hagman Daily Show. 10,000 new employees to sift through inappropriate content, vexatious content, and the part that really bothered me, Joe, is potentially violent content. And, you know, with what we're seeing today from the secular progressive, the Luciferian left, it seems that our team is getting a lot more content censorship than they are.
Oh, absolutely it is. And that's just, you know, when you see the amount of bias that is in the top levels in all of media and entertainment world and politics, it's no surprise that you're going to see these social media giants be right along those same lines, and they have these ultra-progressive ideologies, and that's going to transfer over to content. They're going to start, and we've seen them do this already to so many on the conservative side, to demonetize and stop the ability of these people to be able to broadcast live. If you get one strike on your YouTube channel, you are actually punished or put in a timeout to where you're not allowed to do any live streams until a certain period of time has, I think it's 90 days, until 90 days has progressed, and then you're given your live stream privileges back. Thankfully, that's not happened to us here, but it could happen at any day. Then what? Then we'd have to go back to the audio format and find a new video format in the time being. Well, with the new round of hires, it's going to be very possible that regular content that just has an opposing view other than that, you know, ultra progressive ideology, that will be banned, that could be censored. We've already been demonetized on YouTube along with thousands of other conservative Christian leaning people and personalities, and that trend is only going to continue with the more people that they hire. And I would like to talk with both Alicia Powell and Peter Chaka on this, because they're both journalists and they see this censorship and its effect it has on journalists and news outlets. So we have to find ways to move outside of that YouTube platform to be able to create revenue, because, you know, people are, and news organizations, they're not going to do this for free, you know, and all the voices out there, YouTube was a way to kind of help you get that monthly income that you needed to stay relevant. And with that taken away, it has left a lot of people scrambling, and they're wondering, you know, how can we generate revenue like we were getting from YouTube. So it's put a lot of people back, and thankfully for us, you know, we have people who donate to us. We have the Patreon set up, which is an awesome tool. I think that's fantastic, and we have to continue to look for other ways to branch out so we don't get caught up when YouTube makes the decision that it's not going to affect our whole operation and make us change the way we do things. We should already be planning, finding other ways to generate that revenue. So, and that starts when, John? Is that in January of 2018?
Yes, it's going to begin full throttle in January here in 2018. And you know, Joe, while I was listening to you speak, it got me thinking about the term black hole. You may recall that about 6 months ago, Mike Adams, the health ranger, went on record saying that over 140,000 of his pieces, various reports, had been black-holed in the whole Google search engine
landscape. Yeah, he got censored.
He did.
His website got censored.
And in producing the show day in and day out, you know, obviously we use all of these platforms regularly, and I've noticed lately, and Joe, I'd like to get your opinion on this, that you can type in the simplest top of drudge news item into Google. Google seems to be the worst of the three. And often items that have no relevance to what you just typed in whatsoever come up. You have to get 6-8 pages deep to find what you're looking for. And if anything does come up, it's always Salon or Huffington Post or Politico. It's, you know, they bury InfoWars or The Health Ranger or Caravan to Midnight, True News, what have you. They bury these reports, these articles, a good 6-8 pages deep, Joe.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem. And there are awesome alternative search engines out there that are really starting to rival Google. And they're, I remember the, and I think Google's reinstalled some of these, but the analytics, you used to be able to search in real times about certain things and see the numbers of what's trending and what's not. And they removed access to those for a while, but I think some of them are starting to find their way back. But there are great alternatives out there to Google that we don't have to use the Google YouTube, conglomerate that it is. And I'll get a list of about 5 alternative search engines, because I don't know all of them off the top of my head, that people use instead of Google that are very effective. And I'll get that list out, hopefully by tomorrow, because I've seen some good alternatives and there's a few new ones that have just come out. Browsers that are, and search engines that are, really handy and make it much more user friendly than we've seen with Google. I want to kind of switch gears here. I want to talk about Donald Trump real quick. We have some interesting news both on the Mueller investigation and then in something that we said was going to happen that the press is now doing. On the front of Drudge, there is articles talking about where the direction of the investigation into Mueller's investigation into Trump is headed. And this is from NBC News, and there's a few other similar articles out there. Focus on Flynn Trump timeline suggests obstruction is on Mueller's mind. This article goes on to detail that the Mueller investigation is focusing on a critical 18-day period that began when senior officials were told that Michael Flynn was susceptible to blackmail by Russia. The questions about what happened start January 26 to Flynn's firing on February 13th, that 18-day period in there. They say that it appears to relate to possible obstruction of justice by President Trump, say two people familiar with Mueller's investigation into Russia's meddling and potential collusion with the Trump campaign. I almost laugh when I read that last sentence here. It's been so long, and they continue to, push this narrative that Russia meddled in the election either through, manipulation of news or by getting people on the Trump campaign involved with their cause and agenda. But, this just shows the lack of any real Russia collusion evidence, because what they're doing now, if this reporting is true, which we have no reason to assume it is, again, this is by anonymous sources, and we've seen, from people close to Mueller, we've seen reports like this in the past that have not been accurate. But if this article is accurate, it tells me that there's nothing there, as we have been saying and as we suspected, on Trump-Russia collusion. So what they're doing is going back and trying to say, well, where can we point an obstruction of justice charge on Trump? How can we make this stick? Are they going to use the Comey firing from the FBI? Or now it looks like they're examining another possible angle, which is the 18-day period after the White House learned that Trump could be susceptible to blackmail by Russia till the day he fired him. So they're fishing. And I do believe if Mueller tries to throw an obstruction charge on Trump, it's not going to stick. It won't go anywhere. I could be wrong. But if that's what this investigation is reduced to, then they are fishing. They are scraping the bottom of the barrel. Joan, what do you think about the Mueller investigation?
Well, it's hard to know what to think. My thoughts shift a little bit every day. But one thing, if you sort of pull the camera lens back, that is of great concern to me, and Joe, we've talked about this on The Daily Show, is that the entire fake stream media narrative, this whole Russian collusion thing that's been with us for the majority of President Trump's tenure as we enter the conclusion of his first year as president, is robbing our country of one of the primary pillars of strength that we have garnered much of our global power and our leadership skills from, really, over the last century. And that's the market of free ideas. The way this is supposed to work is the right, the political right, if you will, has a certain ideology, a certain agenda, etc. The left has typically a very opposing agenda. And then we're supposed to, in the market of free ideas, take these ideas to the public, and in a representative republic, through a democratic process, we're supposed to arrive at comfortable mediums that make us a stronger country. And what concerns me with all of this fake news, with all of the time and attention spent on this special counsel, is we've lost that huge capability that, in fact, makes us a stronger country. What do you think?
I'll mute myself there. Yeah, I mean, yes and no. The political ideology... See, this, to me, this Mueller investigation is just feeding that divide, that that alternative reality and ideology that we have between, you know, the left and the right in this country, and it's just trying to continue to really keep hopes alive that Trump's election win was some kind of fluke and it's going to be reversed. I mean, we talked about this earlier on our daily show, that with these mistakes and CNN having to walk back these articles, that it seems, and we know this to be true, that the news media is more focused on trying to nail Trump, you know, I gotcha, than they are on verifying their facts to get him out of office. They wanted to make him look as stupid as possible. An example of that is today, when we have this terror attack in New York City, this attempted terror attack, which we're going to get into. You have on an interesting story on Newsbusters that details what CNN was doing as that terror attack or attempted terror attack was unfolding. And it's gotten a lot of some traction in the media that the CNN, an hour into the an hour after the attempted terror attack in New York City, is reporting on CNN, on Donald Trump and his consumption of Diet Coke and TV habits. This from Newsbusters, and this is funny.
I knew you were going to go there.
An unfolding terror attack in New York City wasn't enough to derail CNN's obsession with Donald Trump. 40 minutes after the attempted suicide bomber attempted to murder people with a bomb, New Day journalist lost interest. Co-host Allison Camaretta and others had more important topics. Trump's appreciation of Diet Coke. The journalist broke in with a devastating story. We now have breaking news. Emergency crews in New York City, they're responding to some type of possible explosion. Anyway, they went from there. We do have more information about President Trump's habits inside the White House. Then they went on to detail his saying he drinks a case of Diet Coke a day, 12 Diet Cokes a day, as well as watching 8 hours of TV a day. And obviously that reporting in itself is pretty funny. It's reminiscent of the two scoops of ice cream, you know, and anything else that these people want to try to nail Trump with the tax returns, that's probably going to make its way back in the news here. But anyway, they got some pushback from their listeners and other media analysts on Twitter as this was going on. And it, if you read some of the comments, as I like to do on Twitter, it's really funny, some of the stuff that you see people sending to CNN. But again, I mean, this is not news. His habits, regardless if that's true or not, which I hope it's not. I hope he's not drinking 12 Diet Cokes a day. But it's not news. And we see, you know, just the constant disrespecting of Donald Trump, the attempt to slander and marginalize him in the press. And I guess, I don't know why we continue to cover it. It's not surprising. It's not original at this point. I guess it's just astonishing to see that the lengths they will go. And we saw it, speaking of the White House and the press, how many people saw Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Jim Acosta go at it today. Jim Acosta started to ask questions to Sanders about the Trump accusers. And we're going to talk about this also, because this is an important story. I think this is half the reason the media was, you know, so gung-ho about these sexual assault allegations, because at some point they knew that they were going to bring them back around to Trump. And we talked about that on this show in the past, and they're doing just that. But today, Jim Acosta was asking Sarah Sanders a question about those accusers, and if, you know, he believes that you know, we're going to see the rehashing of this, and should Trump face some sort of ethics investigation? And Sarah Sanders says, I'm not finished yet, and really puts Acosta back. But he was getting real disrespectful. And speaking of Sarah Sanders, how many people saw the Chelsea Handler? I don't know what I didn't see it. I saw the headline and a picture of it. Did she do a video mocking Sarah Sanders? Because, like I said, I only saw the headline, but it looked like it. That's what it was.
I believe she did, too. Yes, she did.
Okay.
And, you know, when we look at the... Just to switch gears a little bit here, Joe. When we look at the geopolitical points of conflagration around the globe right now, we reported last week that there were quite a few reports that China had inserted spec ops troops into Syria. So we now have the three global superpowers in Syria.
Iran's pulling out.
And
according to
news
reports,
that. Yes, indeed. Iran is
or Russia is pulling out.
Russia's pulling out, and probably the best idea, really. And of course, we don't really admit that we have assets on the ground in Syria, but of course we do. And then North Korea's taken a little bit of a back seat the last three or four days to what I call Allegation Gate. The other day, of course, we saw Corey Feldman was in the top of the news again with the tape that he made with the Los Angeles Police Department surfacing, going all the way back to 1993. My point is, these small domestic stories, and not to take away anything from Corey Feldman, I'm in his corner 100%, but I think that the mainstream media is adjusting, massaging the narrative to distract us from some of the most important situations that we face right now as a country. Joe, you know as well as I do, this situation with North Korea is very serious. Having successfully fired a missile early last week all the way up into the atmosphere, a missile that General Mattis went on record noting could potentially hit anywhere in the continental United States, provided that the trajectory were flatter. It was less of a ballistic flight and more of a flat trajectory. And the missile, in fact, landed in Japan's economic zone. And yet today, we see nothing about this in the mainstream media. There's really nothing on Drudge either. And, of course, Syria remains a point of concern. So I think that, again, to go back to this idea of the market of free ideas, the way we've traditionally been as a country, we would have the right... through our commander-in-chief, the chief executive, President Donald Trump, stating our agenda, our goals for the next year of his administration, etc. The left, of course, would generally have a more socially and maybe economically conscious approach to how we spend money, how we allocate our resources, etc. But what's happened is we have a complete shutdown of that dialogue right now. We have the DNC, one of the two primary parties in this country, fashioning all of this fake news, all of these allegations, many of which, most of which, really have no there, and so they're not keeping up their end of the dialogue. And at the same time, the mainstream media is criminally complicit in amplifying all of this fake stream media, plastic head garbage news, Joe.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the CNN, Trump's Diet Coke habits, Network Wines, President a bully tormenting kids. And then we covered that walking back another bombshell. The divide in this country is the ideological divide is terrible. And with the special election in Alabama with Roy Moore, it is going to get interesting because, you know, if Roy Moore wins, we already heard in the Senate that they're going to launch, you know, ethics investigations against him. As soon as he's seated, he's going to be on the hot seat. I mean, the hot seat, because they're going to move to impeach him. And if Roy Moore doesn't win, they are going to use that as a referendum on the Trump agenda, saying, oh, even Alabama is not voting in a Republican. Wait till the 2018 elections. You know, you're going to have a Democratic landslide. Trump and his popularity. That's what they're going to make this out to, even though they've already poisoned the mind of all the voters with their allegations. And at this point, it doesn't even matter if they're true or not. We saw the Nielsen lady walked back that she did add some of the writing to the yearbook, the date and the location apparently, which she did attribute all of that to Roy Moore. So you have an issue of credibility with the witnesses. But tomorrow is the special election, and it will be interesting to see what happens in that election and moving forward. There's two polls out today, one from Fox News and one from Rasmussen. They're a huge swing of difference. One has Doug Jones up by 10. The other has Roy Moore up by 9. So we'll see how that turns out in just about 26 hours. Another question. Should Trump resign over allegations of sexual abuse? We warned you about this a few weeks ago, that this was going to be coming back around to get Trump. And sure enough, it is. And the most predictable move in recent weeks, Democrats have turned from forcing Senator Al Franken off a political cliff to pressuring President Trump to step down from office. They're bringing back his old accusers, the people that accused him before the election of anything from, you know, unwanted kisses and sexual harassment. Then they're calling him a sexual predator. Now, we know that these accusers came out before the election, and the people still decided to vote for Donald Trump. So I don't really see the benefit of trying to bring it back now, because I don't see any different outcome. But hey, they can't find anything else to bring down Donald Trump. Let's try something we tried before. They're just recycling old ideas at this point. We're going to be back after this short break. Portions of our program tonight is brought to you by Omaha Steaks. Omaha Steaks, use the promo code HH. More on that later. When we come back, we got another half hour of news. We're going to hit immediately the attempted terror attack in New York City and all the details there, as well as other important news and current event information. You're listening to this Monday edition of the Hagmann Report. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go anywhere. Back to this Monday edition of the Hagmann Report. We got a lot we're going to get into this half hour, and we are going to start with what happened in New York City today. We have the attempted terror attack as a pipe bomb detonated made of Christmas lights, sugar, and match heads in New York City subway tunnel. We're also going to talk about the California wildfires, as well as the Pentagon announcing that they're defying Trump's transgender ban in the military. And we're going to have the details on that shortly, but we're going to bring you a word from one of our sponsors.
Speaking of gifts, give the gift of a box of steaks, or give it to yourself. You know, my wife just loves to get Omaha Steaks. OmahaSteaks.com is the place to go. Instead of going out in the snow, you know, when it's up to your hips, have your meat delivered to you, or have... If you can't think of a gift for that someone, that special someone, perhaps a boss even, this is a perfect gift for someone who has it all. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how. For under $50, for $49.99, you can get my family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter our code HH in the search bar. Folks, that's 75% off. And they've got over 500 gourmet gift ideas. They've got great steak experiences at home. They offer the most flavorful, tender aged beef. They've got and so many other gourmet items. You can spend all day long at omahasteaks.com. But again, don't forget to put HH in the search bar. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving you, our listeners and viewers, an exclusive savings just to you. Listen to everything you'll get for under $50 very quickly. 2 filet mignons, 2 top sirloins, 2 boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, and they're fantastic. Everything's fantastic. 4 steak burgers, 4 potatoes au gratin, 4 caramel apple tartlets, which I know Eric the Tech and John, they fight over all the time, and I gotta break them up. And of course, the Omaha Steak seasoning packet, and 4 kielbasa sausages, plus you'll also get extra 4 free kielbasa sausages by ordering this pack. When you go to omahasteaks.com, enter our code HH in the search bar, you'll get a 75% savings. All of that for just $49.99. omahasteaks.com, HH in the search bar. You can't beat that. And that makes a great gift.
All right, we have information on the attempted terror attack that happened in New York City today. Bangladeshi taxi driver intentionally detonated his pipe bomb made of Christmas light sugar and match heads in New York City subway tunnel in protest over Christmas posters on the wall, as well as apparently he had issue with President Trump's announcement recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. The pipe bomb prematurely went off in an underground tunnel linking the Times Square subway station to Port Authority, a bus terminal, on Monday morning around 7:20 a.m. The suspect was an unmarried 27-year-old green card holder named Akaid Ula. Ula came to the U.S. 7 years ago from Bangladesh on a U.S. visa from people who have family in the U.S. This is what's called chain immigration, and I've been hearing a lot about that in the news recently, even before this incident happened, and we're going to be talking a little bit about what that is as people are looking at whether it should be stopped. CNN reports that the bomb detonated prematurely. If it had gone off as intended, the damage could have been catastrophic. It was said that the explosives were made by this man himself after reading instructions on the internet. The FBI has been swarming multiple addresses connected to Ula in Brooklyn. And this is an interesting part of this. Neighbors say they had heard yelling and screaming coming from the apartment, his apartment, the last two nights, and that this man was not a friendly person. Now, he survived. There's a video out there you can see where he's walking down this corridor, and really, for being in such a crowded city, nobody's that close to him, maybe 3 feet away at the closest. And this thing detonates while it's strapped to his chest, and he falls down. He suffered some burns, but he has been talking to investigators in the hospital, and he says that the reason, one of the reasons he told investigators that he carried out the attack was revenge for recent actions by Israelis against Muslims in the Palestinian Gaza Strip, that according to this Daily Mail report. Now, I want to know, it says he was arguing with somebody in his house the last two evenings. Was it family? Was it a girlfriend? They say he wasn't married. And that the headline in this article says that he went out and did this because he was angry about Christmas posters on the wall. Now, I find that hard to believe. We've seen this war on Christmas for so long, and, you know, anything that says Merry Christmas, even in schools and public, is now being said to change it to Happy Holidays. We've seen this battle on and on for years. So I have a hard time wrapping my head around Christmas posters setting this man off to where he wanted to create a terror attack. But it's being attributed to ISIS. ISIS published Times Square, New York City, as a major target, one of the targets that, you know, they want to focus on most, and that this is going to be an ongoing threat throughout Christmas. And that's another headline on Drudge. ISIS targets Christmas. Port Authority bomber was inspired by ISIS Christmas attacks, according to officials. Jump in here, John. And,
clearly, Joe, this man was triggered. And, you know, so there's some holes in the story here. This man comes from Bangladesh. It's being reported 7 years ago. And he comes to a Western Christendom country and is then triggered by Christmas posters. I wonder if he watched the Benghazi video before this yeah. this went down.
Well, this is what the New York Times says. He chose the location because of its Christmas-themed posters, recalling strikes in Europe against Christmas markets, he told investigators, and set off his bomb in retaliation for U.S. airstrikes on ISIS targets in Syria and elsewhere. I mean, how many things is this guy going to... Are they going to report that this guy attributed it to? It's Christmas posters. It's the U.S. bombing ISIS in Syria. It's Trump's decision on Jerusalem. It's, you know, CNN's Diet Coke reporting. I mean, what
well, is not it? Not only that, but he had to go to several stores to purchase all of the match heads, Christmas lights, and what else was it that he used?
Christmas lights, match heads. Let's see. What else? There was one more thing here.
Disturbed individual. Joe, while you search for that, let's talk a little bit about chain migration. There are a couple of subsidiary stories here that will percolate out of this unfortunate situation that occurred in the Port Authority in New York City. Thankfully, there were no fatalities. The perpetrator blew himself up. He detonated early, apparently, with his ad hoc pipe bomb that was full of Christmas cheer. And so that's kind of a good news, bad news situation. Sir, the good news is you're alive. The bad news is you're going to go to jail for a long time. But chain migration. Basically, I want to give some numbers to our listeners and viewers. Now, this is from numbersusa.com, and they appear to be, this is a new website for me, but they appear to be an advocacy group for proper immigration policy in the United States. Now, it says here again, numbersusa.com, that the primary mechanism that's caused legal immigration in the U.S. to quadruple from 250,000 in the late 1950s and through the 1960s to upward of 1 million annually since 1990 is this chain migration. And basically the way it works, Joe, and I think many of our listeners and viewers understand this, but chain migration starts with a single individual coming from any country on the planet, save for a very short list of a few. And they come over, they are able to gain legal entry into the country, they get a green card, or they become a citizen, and then that qualifies them to begin bringing over members of their nuclear family. That more or less makes sense to a degree, depending on how liberal your stance on immigration is. But that's where the chain begins. Then what happens is, as the different members, Joe, of the nuclear family come over, they are then able to begin bringing members of their nuclear family over.
And,
so
and
you
friends.
Can see how this explodes. And something I find troubling, again, at numbersusa.com, is that it says a million annually since the 19... We know that we're getting far more immigrants than that every year. I think that number is probably really conservative. And it just makes one wonder how many people are coming in through the shipping containers at San Pedro, at the Port of Oakland on the West Coast, New York, you know, et cetera, on the East Coast. How many people are coming in through the Great Lakes from Canada? How many people are coming in over the porous southern border? And these are serious concerns. And the other thing I just want to state as kind of a personal note quickly is it troubles me how this person comes over from Bangladesh. Now, I've never been to Bangladesh, but it's definitely a developing country, to say the least. He benefits from a job here. He gets a job driving a taxi, not an easy job to get in a major metropolitan area. He has an apartment. He's apparently triggered by Christmas. He left a Muslim country and came to a Christian country. And with everything this country's done for him, the way he pays us back is to strap an ad hoc bomb to his belly and try to kill innocent Americans. Joe?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's one of, you know, the many that we've seen this year in New York City. We saw, even going back to the Times Square bombing, that was unsuccessful, where a man had a bunch of gasoline and bombs rigged up in a car where he tried to detonate it on the side of the road in Times Square, unsuccessful. We've had the car bike attack earlier and just a few months ago, and there are many more examples of this. And a New York City official, I don't have the information of who he was in front of me, says this is the new normal. And New York City is, you know, probably one of the most prized targets, especially after the World Trade Center, for terrorists in to come here and want to do something there. And this is something that, you know, how can you defend against this? What's the answer? Is more surveillance, better vetting? Well, one thing is, you know, you can stop policies like this chain migration and you know, just this unquestioned, unvetted immigration that we see here in this country that the left has been fighting for. As we see, the government was not shut down because a deal was made. But, you know, we're going to be facing the government shutdown again in a few weeks. And I've seen reports that the left is wanting to hold out until, you know, DACA is reinstituted, which if they're trying to hold the government shutdown hostage over letting illegal aliens to come into this country, then, you know, that's obviously a huge problem. But that just shows you where this battle is at. But thankfully, the bomb detonated prematurely. Nobody was killed. And it was relatively a miracle, probably, that this happened the way it did and nobody else was hurt. And thank God for that. But something we're going to be talking about throughout this holiday season, I suspect, as well as into the future. You know, this is always a threat and these things are going to continue to happen. Let's just hope that law enforcement personnel and others, you know, have their eye on the prize here and are able to foil these. But with the lone wolves, it is really hard to be able to, if he's not communicating with anybody, how do you foil a plot that only the one man knows about? It's basically impossible, unless something like this happens. We're fortunate he was not a skilled bomb maker. Otherwise, the results could be much different today.
You know, Joe, let's take a look at what President Trump had to say today. Now, keep in mind, listeners and viewers, this is reported at time.com. But President Donald Trump said of Monday's attack on New York City's Port Authority bus terminal was the result of lax immigration system that, quote, allows far too many dangerous, inadequately vetted people to access our country, end quote. The president went on to say, quote, the terrible harm that this flawed system inflicts on America's security and economy has long been clear. I am determined to improve our immigration system and put our country and our people first, end quote. I'll give the listeners and viewers one more short piece. President Trump said that his travel ban for residents of six Muslim-majority countries, which the Supreme Court recently allowed enforcement of in full, was, quote, one step forward in securing our immigration system, end quote. Joe, let me ask you, we reported on this a little bit last week, but we had so much going on, the news has just been so insane. The Supreme Court last week, they actually went ahead and upheld President Trump's, what they're calling a travel ban, I would call it reasonable vetting. You want to give us a little background on that, Joe, contextualize a little bit?
Well, the original travel ban was supposed to be a temporary 90-day ban on six Muslim-majority nations that was, they were supposed to have the temporary ban in order to place in much tougher and more thorough vetting procedures. And once it was issued as an executive order, it was, you had judges from in Hawaii and California saying it's not valid, and you have the lawsuits, but they did, side with Trump, I believe, on the travel ban, ultimately. Did they not?
Yes, they did. And again, this is from time.com. Let's see, it says, Trump said that his travel ban for residents of six Muslim-majority countries, which the Supreme Court recently allowed enforcement of in full. A little bit of a clunky sentence there, but that happened early last week. And it just stupefies me, Joe, because much of, I would say the majority of what President Trump says publicly, it makes sense to me. And I think that if we look back a generation or two, it makes sense to most of our parents and probably the majority of our grandparents. And yet here we are at this place and this time where we have such a massive division in this country that really, honestly, to me, what resonates is just good common sense and basic traditional Americanism triggers half the country and in many cases triggers them to violence, and violence perpetrated on completely innocent people.
Yeah, and we have an example of the you know, great divide. We saw that Trump issued a ban barring transgenders from entering the military, which makes sense. You have, you know, so many things to consider. You know, first of all, the mental makeup of somebody who goes through one of those, you know, reassessment surgeries. You have the hormones, and there's just a lot of things to deal with. So, in a strange move, the Pentagon basically says, what they're doing, they are going against the president's executive order on banning transgenders. And this new policy, the Pentagon is allowing transgender people to enlist in the military beginning January 1st, despite Trump's opposition and executive order. The new policy reflects growing legal pressure on the issue and the difficult hurdles the federal government would have to cross to enforce Trump's demand to ban transgender individuals from the military. Two federal courts have already ruled against the ban. Potential transgender recruits will have to overcome a lengthy and strict set of physical, medical, and mental conditions that make it possible, though difficult, for them to join the armed services. How long until, you know, something like this, where the strict set of conditions are removed, deemed to be, you know, too gender bias? I mean, this is what we're working with here. There was in New Zealand, there's a weightlifter who was a man, now had some surgery and is a woman, who is able to lift more weights than in all the competitions than the other women. And he gave an interview that was on the Daily Wire over the weekend, I believe, that talked about how he doesn't believe he has any advantage over the women because they're all, you know, the same sex, according to him. But this is what we're dealing with. And to see the Pentagon, I would say, putting other service members in jeopardy, because again, you have to consider, you know, the mental and medical, the cost alone that, you know, these people are going to be joining the military. Then from there, allowed and having the military pay for these reassessment surgeries then paying for the medicine and the hormones and the counseling. That's crazy to me. You know, you can't get into the Army or the Marines if you have,
flat feet.
There's so much, yes. And I'm sorry for not having the proper words. I've been having a rough time today with trying to articulate what I'm thinking. But yeah, there are so many disqualifying things in the military that you will not be allowed to join. Anything from a dirty urine to not the right blood pressure to scars in some cases and past surgery. So to turn around, for the Pentagon to turn around and do this, it is pretty crazy to me. But this just shows you more of the divide. The president, his authority is being usurped each and every day by all agencies inside the government, it seems. And not only that, but many of the, federal court judges that were Bush and Obama appointees. It's frustrating to watch.
It is frustrating, Joe, and I'd like to do again kind of place some context around this story, because this is important. You know, something that you see historically from the left versus the right. The left tends to fashion the military as a social experimentation petri dish, and that is not what the military is designed for. The military is designed to fight and win wars, period. If we do humanitarian missions, I'm in favor of those. When we send an aircraft carrier, for example, to a disaster zone, we get the desalinization plant going, get some nourishment and blankets and so forth to people. I'm okay with that, and I think most of our listeners and viewers are. But let's take a look at two different aspects of this. First of all, when you place any military personnel in country on any mission, be they in the rear with the gear or up on the front lines, what's going to take precedent, Joe? That person receiving their hormone shipment when you have limited logistical support, or the proper doses of, I don't know, pain medication,
right,
so that soldiers in hospital are taken care of when they have, battlefield casualties. And in looking at the history of this, this is from you're going to love this source.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but before you jump in,
maybe it's good that you did.
This is an elective thing. It's not like, I wouldn't have a problem if it was a natural. Say there was a soldier who had depression or PTSD or some physical issue that they got. Paying for the medicine and stuff then, that's fine. But to have to put taxpayers' money, when you're talking about the military, when you're talking about war and who's going into battle, to have to worry about things like that, to have to pay money for the upkeep of that, it's absolutely insane. And I hope, thank God, that there's not that many people who are, becoming transgendered. But I mean, you talk about setting other soldiers up for failure and creating distrust and disharmony inside the military. This is a way to do it, for sure. But again, as I said, the population and people, I'm sure, are so low that most people won't, ever see the effects of this. But still, it's a bad precedent to set for our military for a number of reasons. And what's the benefit, I guess, is the question.
Well, the benefit is there really is no benefit. The social justice warriors and the left writ large can claim some kind of quasi-victory. But, Joe, to go back to that Petri dish analogy for a moment, we have the first, Virginia's Danica Rome, who made history Tuesday night by becoming the first openly transgender person elected and seated in a state legislature in the United States. And Danica Rome spoke live with Fox 5 about her journey and what it means to win. So let's take a look at these two different situations. The military, again, is created to fight and win wars. And anything that compromises that intangible but incredibly important element of keeping soldiers, airmen, Marines, sailors competent, ready to fight, ready to stand in the gap is morale. And anything that compromises a unit's cohesive fighting capability and morale is a bad idea. Now, Joe, I'll ask you this. Danica Rome, again, being seated in the state legislature in Virginia, do you think this is similar to the military thing, or do you think this is perhaps more permissible since it's not a frontline life and death type issue?
I'll go with the latter, more permissible. But, again, back to what the Pentagon is doing here. Now, we know that the military has very strict sets of guidelines, and you have to, as I said earlier, you can't have certain health problems. You have to have a certain, I guess, physical physique and health. You have to be mentally fit. You have to be physically fit, and they get you into physical shape if you're not. So that's not so much of a concern. But with something so drastic as a gender-altering surgery, and the unknown effects that we don't even know people who get these surgeries have. One of the things that's underreported in the news is how many people who get the surgery eventually wish that they could go back to the way they were, or the suicides that happen. And we already have so much trouble with PTSD and veterans and the way the military takes care of their soldiers that, to me, this is just, you know, a huge problem. It could be a huge problem. But what's even bigger problem is it opens the door. Where does this stop? Where does the pandering to a certain set of society end? And how long until, you know, we have men running around with flowers in their hands instead of guns, and dresses instead of camo, singing songs to each other instead of fighting war? This is what my concern is with this. And to start with something, I mean, first they allowed, you know, the don't ask, don't tell. Okay, whatever. That's not the same as this. Now they're allowing people who are mutilating themselves through elective surgery and have to have that condition maintained by medicine into the army. And you don't know what kind of psychological or physical, and those might not be evident right away with the intake tests that they have. So,
you know,
it's
Joe,
a big question mark.
There's an interesting point to this as well, which is the whole judicial precedent concept. In October, U.S. District Judge Colleen Collar Codaly barred the Trump administration from proceeding with its plan to exclude transgendered people from military service. When we look back in U.S. history, I believe it was President Andrew Jackson who famously said of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at that time, and forgive me, I don't remember the decision off the top of my head, but I believe it was President Andrew Jackson who famously said, "The Chief Justice has made his decision, and now let him enforce it." Joe, President Donald Trump is the chief executive, and he's yep. also the commander-in-chief of our military. When did it become okay for judges from Hawaii and from areas far-flung all over this huge nation to usurp the wishes of the commander-in-chief, particularly when they're illegal?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. And that's something that we will find out, hopefully, as we are a minute away from break, we can get an answer to during this break. But I don't remember, really, in my lifetime, I don't remember ever, and maybe it's because I haven't paid that close of attention, I don't ever remember the president issuing an executive order and getting met with the pushback, as you said, the legal pushback, from inside the same government, from judges in different states saying, no, you can't do this, and testing the president's authority in these areas. I'm not sure that it has happened before. Maybe it has, but that's something we'll have an answer for you, hopefully, right on the other side of this break. ABC News is reporting that the terrorist suspect in New York City, his family has issued a statement, and they are heartbroken. The family of the man accused of detonating an explosive in New York City system said that they are heartbroken by the allegations. But what's interesting here is they say that they're also heartbroken by the law enforcement officials who have held children as small as 4 years old out in the cold, and who held a teenager out of high school classes to interrogate him without a lawyer. These are the sorts of actions we expect from our justice system that we don't expect from our justice system, and we're very confident that our justice system will find the truth behind this attack, and that we will in the end be able to learn what occurred today. It's not clear what children are referred to in this statement, and it is very bizarre. We're going to be back after this with Jake Morfonius. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman Report.